I know there's been a lot of obscenities around your house. You are cleaning, you're cooking, or you're making reservations for that posh Passover resort, and it's leading to all sorts of unfortunate talk. Well, same goes for us, and there may be some of it on this show. So if you can't handle the heat, get out of the kitchen, listen to another podcast, or send the kids to bed before listening to ours. There could be obscenity this week.
You mean when there are some awkward parts, which is my favorite part of this whole book.
You don't want any this is a book liberal about undermining.
Vengeance. Any lily liver. You know?
Hey, I'm Alec. Nice to see you.
Yeah.
Drew's here. We have tanks now.
Hello, Passover cooking and cleaning Jews. This is Unorthodox. I am first among equals Mark Oppenheimer. Is that an okay thing for me to say, guys?
Sure.
I used to say host, but then I realized, but you guys are hosts as well. So then I said MC. Anyway.
You're like a bar mitzvah motivator.
the chosen.
I'm here with Tablet Deputy Editor Stephanie Butnick.
Hello.
Who is having a coffee and a Tropicana orange juice and a bagel.
I just had a bagel. It was delicious.
And I'm here with Tablet Senior Writer Liel Leibowitz.
Hello.
Liel is mid-bagel.
This is our bagel episode. That's right.
This is how real we are.
In anticipation of the holiday when we're not supposed to eat bagels. Liel, do you keep Passover?
I will this year.
You will, because you're like the king of the bacon cheeseburger. So
I will this year.
Why?
He'll have a bacon cheeseburger, but he won't have the bread.
But that's right. Just the pork.
That's
and the
Liel's
cheese.
Judaism.
That's
right. So in anticipation of Pesach, we are doing a whole show just on bagels. We have a great lineup. We'll be talking with a Gentile who learned to make bagels to impress his Jewish girlfriend. We'll be talking with the co-founder of Cleveland Bagels, which are all the rage in the bagel community. We'll be talking with the author of the Hogwarts Haggadah. That's a real thing. We'll get a report on Israeli bagel culture, and we'll have a dispatch from Montreal on the famous Montreal bagels, which I've never tasted.
They're good.
Heard they're good.
No, they're not.
And cookbook author Shannon...
What was that?
They're not good.
And cookbook author Shannon Sarna...
Fake messiah. Fake news.
We'll talk with us about the history of the bagel. So all that in just a minute.
I want to say, Liel, you're technically a bagel-eating Jew right now. How does that square with your own personal religiosity? Because I'm perfectly fine eating bagels, you know.
Right, all you need is a Seinfeld episode, and you're purely a cultural Jew.
And you're
Jew.
The person you hate.
Yeah, all I need is that and, like, not really believing in God or knowing anything about Judaism, and I'm that.
And you're that which you behold.
Sadly, you know, some terms and restrictions may apply.
Are we psyched for Passover? Where does Passover rank in our personal, you know?
I love Passover.
The greatest thing ever.
I also want to say, like, it's one of the holidays where if you're a bagel Jew like myself, you actually don't go to temple. Like,
temple
the
is
meal,
like a shul, I take it. It's like a synagogue?
A temple, yes. Uh-huh, a shul.
A temple.
Well, a conservative temple.
Could we say something about, so
do conservatives call it temple?
So, yeah. Temple?
Do they really?
Shul is only Orthodox.
No. Let me explain. Temple.
Are you mark-splaining right
I'm
now?
I'm going to mark-splain
it to us.
So I've looked into this at one point. So synagogue was the, you know, which is the Greek term for sort of gathering place, is like, was the English translation for a very long time. American Reform Jews called it a temple,
right,
because they're not expecting the real temple to be rebuilt. It was an anti-messianic right. notion, which was,
right.
we're not, you know, the temple's here now. It's in the diaspora.
Now, here's the thing. I am expecting it to be rebuilt. And not in Long Island.
Right. So you're not going to call it a temple.
That's yeah. really
Shul,
rude.
Interesting, which of course is just Yiddish for worship. I mean, it's from school, but it's a separate word now, and it means worship place, right? Synagogue. Shul has actually picked up huge steam in America. It's one of the Yiddish words. So certain Yiddish words are in decline, and other Yiddish words have come on strong. 30 years ago, nobody but the most Orthodox called it shul. Now you'll find total bagel Jews with a Reform temple saying, we're going to shul tomorrow.
Anyway, I like Passover because it revolves around a meal, and it's the whole process, the whole...
I'm sorry, unlike other Jewish holidays?
No, but the whole Seder plays out
at
the table, and I love that about it. And it's to me, I mean, first of all,
right.
Exodus is like my favorite book of the Bible. Like, I love this. I just think it's so fascinating. So I feel very connected to Passover.
Yeah, it's a holiday that revolves around books and food.
This is pretty much my life.
I really like entertaining, and so I like having people over.
There you have it. It's going to be one of those vegan seders.
No.
The tofurkey.
So at our house, it's vegetarian, but when we go to my mother's house, I mean, she wants to serve chicken. That's fine. We don't tell other people what to serve in their houses.
What's a pièce de résistance on your table?
So
like,
I mean, the
squash,
the flourless chocolate cake. Well, we do. Sid. I should say Sid does all the cooking. Let me pre-Mazel Tov.
Let's call a spade a spade.
The Mazel Tov is to Sid for doing all the cooking.
But I mean, Mark loves entertaining.
I love taking out the Haggadahs an hour before people arrive.
Everything is easy.
That's actually uncomfortably true. Like what you're saying, what all of you are thinking right now, which is that Sid slaves away for 3 weeks ahead of time.
And you're like, hey!
And you welcome everyone at the door.
Welcome!
Have a drink!
Good to see you.
My preparation starts.
Sid, make that man a drink.
Let me pivot for a second and say that I'm really curious if you've thought when you and Ben Cohen have your own, when you are home, when you establish the Cohen Butnick, the Butt Cohen household, what the will you guys ever host a Seder?
So
will Ben lead it?
My dream is to host a Seder.
Are you the leader?
Oh, I'm going to lead a Seder.
Sweet.
Come on.
I have not discussed this with Ben, but that's like my dream. But like, we have a studio. It's a very small apartment, but we have one of those like tables that folds teeny tiny out to a really big. And I'm like, we could do this. But I mean, look, the first night we're going to the Butnicks. Second night we're going to the Cohens. The two-night holiday is perfect. Can as someone who's like...
I also have an actual life conundrum that I really do need your help with. It involves Seder leading. So around
every
table,
right?
But I don't know what it actually means to lead, and this is what my question is about. Because around every table, you'd have some people who are really good readers, also maybe comfortable with the Hebrew, who like really make a passage come to life, right? And you'd have some people like, and then Rabbi Tarfon said to Rabbi Ben Zimra, and
but that's part of it,
like, right? But here is my question: is it permissible/advisable to kind of stage manage this? In other words, saying like, why don't you read? Because we used to go around
as opposed to just going around sequentially.
No, right. There's an art. Like when my dad leads a Seder, and anytime there's like a lot of Hebrew, he's like Leslie, who's his brother-in-law, my uncle, and like who, you know, is yeshiva educated.
Uncle Les.
Uncle Leslie, yeah, he makes the greatest chopped liver. So like Leslie takes the Hebrew. That's just how it goes.
Interesting. So we
so it's like the
shout
18.
Out to Uncle Leslie. Yeah,
Leslie
basically.
Takes the Hebrew.
Basically.
Elise takes the poems.
What do you get?
Elise
the wicked
actually,
child?
No,
Sid likes
Sid
likes getting the wicked child.
Well, it's like always a joke who gets what. But my dad is like really into Jubu territory now, as we've discussed.
He's gonna like insert reading.
So he likes
that niche.
There's always like a printout at the beginning for everyone to read.
He's a handout.
Usually there's like a tablet article.
Nice
for everyone to.
Can I suggest a really good appreciation of Billy Joel for this year?
Too divisive for the Seder table.
I will say some of my favorite Jewish times have been Seders. I think that, you know, my parents led some very good Seders. They took us to some good Seders. I had some relatives who did some wonderful Seders. And I think I've led some halfway decent Seders. Some of my least favorite Jewish times have been Seders at certain people's houses where, like, I had one relative who led it so badly. He just undermined it from the start. It was like, okay, I guess we should open the Haggadahs now. That whole thing.
So give me, because I say this completely genuinely, I bet you lead a really good Seder.
Yeah, like there's questions.
Give me advice, because I've
give
never
us all
done
advice.
This.
Okay, number one, the we have a Haggadah that's basically a graphic novel cartoon Haggadah,
okay,
which is perfect for the kids, but actually it's perfect for most adults too. Like
our kids this year, just to interrupt, will be perusing Moshe Rosenberg's Hogwarts Haggadah.
Right, so
that's great.
Use a fun Haggadah because the point is.
But I make my own Haggadah for the rest with like deep.
What?
Reading. Yeah,
that's
I make
cool.
one every year.
I have to say, there was one year where all of a sudden there was like 10 copies of the Jonathan Safran Foer Haggadah. It did not go well.
So I'm just going to say, like, you want a fun, and because the story is heavy enough, the story will carry the meaning. Let the Haggadah have great pictures. Let it not be too, you know, two.
It would have been enough.
Another thing, have some little munchies. Have some crudité, celery, carrots.
Oh, duh.
In advance. Like, don't make everyone starve until they get
to. That's what Leslie's chopped liver is.
Yeah. What is it? Chopped liver?
Oh, so last year we actually had vegan chopped liver, too.
Ugh.
Almost tastes the same.
Okay. Three other things.
Oh, yes.
Since you asked. Say a shechechianu at the beginning. Say, like, this is the first time this particular group of people is gathering together. Let's honor that. I think that's nice.
That's too religious.
I think... Just like,
I'm joking.
You know what else I started doing is we say a Kaddish for anyone who's died in the previous year. Just go around. Has anyone lost anyone or does anyone remember anyone? We have a minion here. Let's say a Kaddish for them. And then you have to, if you're the leader, you got to lean into the singing. Like when it's Dayenu or Eliyahu Hanavi, like
yeah, but then
my voice sucks, but you got to own it.
But then every asshole comes with their own like particular tune. And then like all of a sudden you're realizing 30 seconds in that people are singing seven different songs.
Well, singing is fun, right? More singing is better than less. Are your in-laws coming again, Liel?
Yes, they are.
So who's at the Leibowitz table?
Some friends, some family, some Jews, some non-Jews, mostly non-Jews.
It is a little awkward for non-Jews, I think, to hear some of the content.
I think Jews would be in the minority.
Non-Jews love Passover.
Yeah, no, but they're only ones to take it seriously.
But there's a lot of like...
The Gentiles. God bless them.
There's like a few awkward moments for...
Yeah, like...
For
like what? The
that
part
revealed
about
the way Jews...
The liturgy was not...
And you're naked and your breasts are like that
no,
part.
No, no. Where's that
like
part?
The goyim are like, oh,
where's that part?
Magusta.
I saw in my Haggadah.
Our first guest this week is Ben Piggott. He is our BOTW, Boyfriend of the Week, not Jew of the Week, and he's more than a Gentile of the Week. He's in the Royal Australian Navy, and he is the significant other of Naomi Talushkin, who is the sister of our producer, Shira Talushkin. And Ben, you are in no sense Jewish, right?
Not currently, although I do plan on being Jewish at some stage in the future, yeah.
All right, so mazel tov. So you're dating Naomi, right? Or maybe dating undersells it. But so we heard that you have a bagel story for us that comes out of your relationship with the Jewess. Can you tell us about your history with bagels?
So I had never really thought about bagels as a Jewish food. They were sort of, in my mind, they were an American food, if that makes sense. And I'd never thought about them very much before I started dating Naomi. But her place in New York is near Absolute Bagels, if you're familiar with it.
Sure.
The best bagels on earth.
That's what I've been told, yeah. So I thought, well, here we are in Perth in Western Australia. So we need to get on this train. So I went to what I believe is the only kosher deli in Western Australia, in the suburb of Menorah, if you can believe that's what it's called.
They make the Jews live in Menorah?
Of course they do.
That's right. That's it. So you walk around Menorah, there's this kosher deli and one of the three shuls in Western Australia, I think. So I went in there and I got some onion bagels and I thought these are pretty good. So I thought maybe we should go home and try and whip something like that up. So home I went and had a go.
So I just have to say, no Jew in history has ever we don't learn to make our own bagel. I mean, the move of I'm going to bake my
By the way,
own
this
bagels.
This is the greatest love story ever told.
I know.
This
you
is
know?
Amazing. Like,
fuck Tristan and Isolde. Like, this is it right here.
But I mean, you know, Jews, that's what we buy our bagels. That's what the deli is for. Is like, I don't. Has anyone ever heard? Does either of you have a friend who's ever made a bagel?
No.
There's
no.
A lot that we cook, but bagels.
No.
Well, Molly is going to learn.
Yes, seriously. So how's it going? Do you feel like have you mastered it?
I think I'm getting a lot better, yeah. So I started putting caraway seeds on them, which is just like if you're not putting caraway seeds on your bagel, you're wasting your time. So it's just essential.
You know, I like this first step towards your becoming a Jew, which is you're making bagels.
By the way, I don't think any other steps are required.
You're done. You're in.
Man, if you want to, you're Jewish. We said so. We'll send you the certificate in the mail.
But you are planning to...
That'd be good. Can you tell my rabbi?
Absolutely.
Can you let him know as well?
Yep.
Are you actually... You are studying for conversion?
I have just started to, yeah.
Do you have any questions? I mean, before we let you go, the three of us, we're not actually rabbis, but we're better than that. We're Jewish podcast hosts.
Yep.
And so do you have any questions about Jewish culture, about keeping a Jewish wife happy, about...
Well, make bagels is a really good
first
step.
Right. You've got that.
I think he could teach us that, Mark. I don't think he needs any help in that department.
I mean, guys, I don't want to throw shade, but I think I've got the keeping the Jewish wife happy pretty locked down.
You're the master, man.
Snap. All right. Ben Piggott, if you need anyone to officiate your wedding, Liel and I are both ordained, if it comes to that. And,
please serve bagels.
You know, we'll do it just for the free trip to Australia.
Fantastic. It's going to be in Perth, which is one of the nicest places in Australia. So that'll be fantastic for you guys.
All right. Deal. Well, we will co-officiate.
And you cater.
Fantastic.
All right.
Love it.
Thanks,
Thank
Ben.
Thank you.
Take care.
Spectacular. Catch you guys.
Bye-bye. I didn't have the guts to ask him about the circumcision.
Our next guest is Jeff Hardman, co-founder of the Cleveland Bagel Company, which is taking Cleveland by storm. Hi, Jeff.
How are you?
It's the Cleveland Clinic of bagels. It's just world.
They are
renowned.
Not cavalier about their bagels.
Very well played. Man. That was a wow. Look at you. That's a pun.
Is that a sports joke?
I've been working on that. That was a pun and a sports joke at once. I am changing.
So, Jeff, you and your partner Dan have an unorthodox route to bagel making. Will you tell us about it?
Yeah, we are not bakers. We were not, you know, I was in software, and he was working in logistics with warehouses, and we were neighbors. So, as Dan likes to say, he was blessed with the opportunity of unemployment, and we were sitting in the back porch of our apartment building and wondering what to do, and he said kind of offhand comment, like, well, maybe I'll make bagels. And I jumped in. So we started it, played around with recipes for about 6 months, tried to figure it out. And about after a year, we figured we had something that was pretty good. And,
let me interrupt you right there.
Sure.
What's step one? What's okay? Okay, like, let's do this. What does, like, day one look like?
It has to do with the internet, right? They go online, find a recipe.
Do you, like, Google how to make bagels, and then do you try it? Like, how does that look?
Yeah, we just used the first one that popped up on Google, and that's what we've been using ever since.
No, but I'm serious, because I really would not know where to start.
So day one is, you know, really just talking about what makes a great bagel, right?
Were you guys even bagel fans?
How can you not be? It's a bagel.
So what? How would you describe your Cleveland bagel, like the Cleveland bagel?
So the Cleveland bagel, I mean, we tried to go, you know, kind of old school. At first, we started to try to emulate how New York did it, you know, with the burlap and flipping it and, you know, high heat oven. And then we, you know, once we kind of got away from that and, you know, released the shackles of trying to do it New York style, we came up with our own. And, you know, I mean, really what makes a great bagel is the, you know, the crunchy, like slight crunch exterior and a very chewy center.
So here's kind of a you know, popular myth, urban legend, if you will, that says that you actually cannot technically, physically make great bagels out of New York because bagels are all about the water. And unless you have our perfect, sweet, flowing water straight from the Hudson.
The Adirondacks.
From the Adirondack peaks.
A melted glacier.
You absolutely cannot achieve that level of flavor.
Yeah.
So that's total bullshit, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And there's actually been articles written recently about that it's just a complete myth. I mean, there are bagel companies. There's one down in Florida, and he claims that, you know, he's got the right mineral mixture for duplicating, you know, New York water and whatnot. I mean, it's a gimmick. Listen, you put in the hard work, you do, you know, you try out a lot of different recipes, you can get a great bagel. I mean, no offense, and this might shock you guys, but I mean, you're a Cleveland bagel company, think our bagel is better than a New York bagel.
Yeah, I'm not. I have to say, I love bagels, and I'm excited to go to Cleveland at some point and try your bagels.
Like, yeah, I'm sort of rooting for you, but at the same time,
but I mean, I'm not. You know, I'm not an obsessive. Unlike Liel, I'm not an obsessive by nature. You must encounter people like who do bagel pilgrimages. I mean, for every cultural thing, there's a community of
obsessives,
right? Like, have you had the obsessives walk in and like turn your bagel sideways, smell it, try it with different wines, like.
Yeah, we've had people travel from all over the country. They come in. Yeah, some people really are kind of, we'll see about this. And they leave fans, you know? I mean, they come in, they've got this attitude, they have our bagel, and they leave fans. I mean, they'll take a picture with us, you know, they'll, you know, introduce us to their wives and their kids. I mean, so yeah, you definitely have a community that is, you know, hardcore, and thankfully, so far, knock on wood, we've been able to appease them.
And in the wider, I mean, in the Cleveland community, have you, what's been the reception of the bagels?
It's fantastic. I mean, I had one guy call me on the phone the other day, and he said, I have to tell you guys, I hate you. And here I'm like, you know, pit in my stomach. What did we do? This and that. And he's like, I was a big H&H guy. I used to live in New York. He's like, I have to drive up and get your bagels every weekend, and I live 50 minutes away. So thank you. And, you know, I mean, it was all, you know, tongue in cheek, but I mean, that really gets Dan and I. I mean, we're really appreciative of those calls.
So are you guys, how many stores do you have? Just one right now?
Just the one.
Are you expanding?
We're looking at our second location. Yep. We're looking at our second
location. Is your second location on the Upper West Side of Manhattan? Because it kind of should be.
That would be a shot right. Yeah. That would be.
I mean, come on now.
Listen. That's our dream, is that, you know, one day we're gonna open one up in New York and show you guys what real bagels like.
But first Akron, Toledo, maybe Pittsburgh,
okay, West Virginia,
so, you know, Havana, you know, who knows? So you know, Havana needs bagels too, right?
So you're making bagels in Cleveland. Has LeBron ever had one?
Not to my knowledge, no. We have had a phone call with him, but yeah, where he requested a cinnamon sugar bagel. And
you were like, nope.
Yeah. Yeah, funny story. Actually, I ended up hanging up on him that day, you know, because the conversation was done. I hung up, and Dan looks at me. He's like, "You just hung up on LeBron." I'm like, "Ooh."
You're like, he wanted a cinnamon bagel.
Yeah, he's just wrong.
So I'm assuming.
Well, we do have a cinnamon sugar cranberry bagel with a little bit of orange zest in there now. So
not a real traditionalist.
So, yeah, I was about to say, man, that's that doesn't go over well in this side of the.
Well,
of Lake Erie.
Every other bagel is traditional. So we go very traditional on the bagels. We go untraditional with our schmears.
Oh, what do you got?
Schmears, I mean, we do like a cherry goat cheese. We have a thyme black pepper horseradish. We do a cheddar chive. We do black garlic schmear, blueberry lemon mint. So we've got about, I don't know, roughly about 30 that we played around with. We did a Reuben schmear once. With, you know, sauerkraut and caraway seeds.
That sounds disgusting.
That
sounds amazing.
That sounds disgusting.
Great. What are you talking about?
Okay, as somebody who has dreamt of opening a small business of my own, in my case, it would be a combination bookstore / vinyl records. Do you end up loathing the store? Like,
it's called Cliché.
Cliché.
By Oppenheimer.
Hey, man, that was cold.
Not at all.
Do you ever just think, like, the last thing I want to do is go open this door? Or do you have minions to open the store for you at this point, and you're home watching ESPN in your pajamas?
We're still in the thick of it. So we still come in most every day. The only thing that I loathe is waking up at 3:30 in the morning. That's it. I mean, that's half the battle, is waking up early to get these things out.
Do you start making them in the morning, or is that just for delivery?
We start making them at 3:30. Yeah, we do a bunch of wholesale accounts. So we've got about 20 locations that we deliver to each day. So that starts at 4 a.m. The shop opens at 6:30. So
amazing.
Got to get up early.
Do you still like bagels?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah,
still. Aren't you dead sick of them?
No, not sick of them. I mean, I don't need them every day. You know, probably every other day I'll try one just to make sure that they're on point. I think Dan's about the same way. Still love the bagels. Guys. Our bagels are that good that I'm not sick of them.
We're going to come to Cleveland.
Yeah,
and
I gotta
try
tell
bagels.
You. You know, I kind of think
we'll
I'm driving up
it.
To Cleveland to do this now.
Are there how Jewish is the bagel scene there? Like, I know there is a historic community of Jews in Cleveland. It's actually a big center for Reform Judaism.
Yep.
Like, do non-Jewish Clevelanders read bagels? We just talked as Jewish. We just talked to an Australian guy who's like, I just thought bagels were American.
That's funny. So if you go through bagel history, I mean, nobody's exactly sure where it started, but they believe it was Poland, and Polish Jewish population brought it over to New York. And then you have the section that, you know, settled in Canada and Montreal, and that's where you have kind of the difference. You've got the Montreal style, the New York style. The history is varied, but there's a ton of cultures. I mean, they don't call it a bagel, but most cultures, I mean, Africa, Asia, they have a bagel type of product. You know,
yeah, but
brown,
I mean, is your
in the middle.
Totally. But is your store in Cleveland, is it kind of like, is it a Jew store? Is it where Jews congregate, or is it just where bagel lovers congregate?
It's just where bagel lovers come. It's open to all. I mean, you know, Dan and I are both goy, so, you know, it's the two non-Jewish guys opening up a bagel shop.
What does one even say?
Well,
America.
We're so happy to,
America,
pass,
baby.
To pass the torch on to you.
Jeff Hardman, thank you so much. Clevelanders can find the Cleveland Bagel Company, their wares around the city. And
at the corner
some fat New Yorkers will soon be driving up.
We'll be in Cleveland soon to test them out. Thank you so much, Jeff.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Happy Passover.
Bye.
Chop the nuts. Pound the dough. Bake it up. Nice and slow. Then you got a Toledo. Toledo surprise.
Now sell it.
Hit the peach. Peel the skin. Mush it up. Throw it in. That's a tasty Toledo. Toledo surprise.
Now you
first you beat it up. Then you sweet it up.
Our next guest is Rabbi Moshe Rosenberg. In addition to being a congregational rabbi in Queens and a high school teacher, he is the author of the unofficial Hogwarts Haggadah, which is currently, what is it, number 9 on Amazon?
Leon? Last we checked, I think it was number 9 or 10 on Amazon.
Like, this is...
Overall Amazon.
I mean,
it is
the intersection of everything perfect on the internet.
Right. Judaism.
Harry Potter.
Harry Potter. Self-publishing.
That's amazing.
It's amazing.
Chelsea Clinton tweeted about it.
It's
on fire.
And he's the father of Tablet's own Tweetmaster... and writer, Yair Rosenberg. So, Reb Moshe, thank you for joining us today.
It's my pleasure.
Okay, so
So why is your Haggadah different from all other Haggadahs?
What an original question.
Thank you.
It is different. In one sense, it is different because it is the first Haggadah that ever tried to combine the magical wizarding world with Jewish tradition. But in one sense, it is just like so many other Haggadot, which are seeking to make fresh and new a story which can get stale and old. Rabbis and spiritual leaders throughout history have been trying to find some way of introducing it to a new generation in their language.
Now, when you
that's
hit,
really what I've tried.
When you now, you're a serious nerd. I mean, you've written for Tablet about Star Trek and Judaism, if I'm not mistaken. And you know, you're probably into Philip K. Dick and, you know, Anne McCaffrey. You're probably into dragons and all that shit. Like, you're a nerd. And
well, in general, yes.
Okay.
You may not have the exact right names, but the idea is correct.
Yeah, I don't know. My sci-fi, my fantasy, they're all the same to me.
I'm more Jim Butcher and Joseph Corey right now.
Oh, okay. Well, Liel nodded approvingly.
Makes sense.
So, at that, so you were obviously, you're a Harry Potter fan. Was there a moment when you thought, oh my God,
I have the best idea ever?
This is gonna kill.
I definitely thought that this was a very natural thing to do. I thought it was a no-brainer. I was totally shocked that nobody had done it before. I pitched it originally to some real publishers and distributors, meaning not me, some traditional publishers and distributors, and they said, you know, check out to see if anybody has done it. What are the comparables? And I was shocked. Somebody had done some sort of a parody of one thing in the Haggadah, but nobody had ever taken it seriously. And I said, why not? Is it only me because I've, you know, done all of this type of stuff with my students because I think weirdly? But it all corresponds. I mean, education, it's all about education. It's all about relationships between teachers and students and parents and children. It's all about good and evil and slavery and freedom.
So forgive me if this is addressed in the Haggadah, because I've only received mine yesterday. I haven't looked at it yet. But so do the four sons belong to the four different houses of Hogwarts?
So I never saw that as a direct correspondence. I saw it as a
The wicked one
idea.
Isn't Slytherin. It's not. It doesn't work like that. The sorting hat doesn't know where to go.
No, I don't think so. I think you can make arguments that they're all wise sons in some way. They just have different types of talents, different learning styles. I mean, we're talking here more Howard Gardner and multiple intelligence than we are, you know, simple, you know, wicked and not knowing how to ask. If you box yourself into those categories, you're going to come up with something artificial. But to me, it says that when you want to teach kids, you have to take their differences into account. And that's exactly what Solomon says in the book of Proverbs, Hanoch Benar al pi darko, educate a child according to that child's own way. I mean, now we call it student-centered, you know, learning and so forth, and it's more and more possible with technology. But in Solomon already knew this, and I'm just, you know, giving it a different name.
So this isn't your first Harry Potter-themed Judaism book. You wrote in 2011, Morality for Muggles, Ethics in the Bible and the World of Harry Potter. And I know you've been using Harry Potter as a sort of a lens to teach young people about Judaism. What makes it such a good tool?
Well, first of all, I love the books. I couldn't do this if I didn't enjoy the book.
Nerd.
There are other books that my kids read that I can't touch. They just don't speak to me. This did speak to me. But then, secondly, I just feel that good literature is all about the human condition. And it really expresses the human condition well. But I think the most important thing is, once I loved it, and once it is expressing the same things that I was trying to teach them, it was something that every one of my students shared. They all knew it. It is a language, a new language that I shared with them. So if someone is trying to teach exactly what I'm trying to teach, or almost exactly, and my students all know what it is, and they speak the language, it would be criminal not to use it. I mean, teachers are always looking for new vehicles and new way. You know, the Dubna Magid might have talked about, you know, a wagon driver and a horse, and the Midrash might talk about a king and a princess. So we talk about, you know, wizards and warlocks.
Reb Moshe, thank you so much for joining us, and have a wonderful, liberated Passover.
It's my pleasure, and you should have an enchanting Passover and a spellbinding Seder.
Yeah, you can retire now, man. That's it. You're done.
Thanks so much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You smile, the song begins. You speak and I hear violins. It's magic.
And now, all the way from Israel, one of my favorite Israelis, tablet contributor, rock star, food columnist and expert, Dana Kessler. Boker Tov.
Boker Tov.
It's not Boker over there.
It's Boker over here.
No,
it's,
not really.
It's Boker in America. So, Dana, like you, I grew up in Israel. And like you, I kind of realized very early on that we don't really have bagels. What's the deal with bagels in Israel?
I know we don't have bagels. I mean, we don't have what you would call a bagel. What you call a Jewish bagel, I believe, or just a bagel. We actually call an American bagel, which is kind of strange. We call it an American bagel, and we don't have very much of it. There's one chain, or maybe two, that actually do sell them as sandwiches with various fillings, like
hummus, you know, and tchina and falafel. And
no, I think more a bit more high end than that, like egg salad.
But we do have something else, right?
We have to be like a bit like a Brooklyn or something like that.
Right, but we do have bagel. You know, tell us about bagel.
Yeah, we have bagel. Yeah, okay. So bagel is quite confusing because we have various things called bagel. There's one thing which is a Romanian bagel, which is hard, and it comes either with salt or sesame seeds on the outside. It's not something you typically make a sandwich out of. It's something you buy like in a grocery store. It's really like a cheap thing. And you just eat it whole, like a pretzel, sort of. Then there's the Jerusalem bagel, which is flat. It's like oval, and it's long. It's like this long oval thing, which is a bit hard to explain. And it's much softer, and it's like with sesame on the outside. And it's a bit sweet. You can like dip it in olive oil, like break a piece, dip it in olive oil, and then in za'atar. And you eat it like that, and it's like really exotic, and tourists love it when they go to like Jerusalem to the market and stuff like that.
Mark, did you have it when you were in Jerusalem?
I did not. I was too busy studying my Jerusalem Talmud to eat the, like, it's the so for every Talmud you have a bagel. You have Talmud, you have bagel Bavli, bagel Yerushalmi.
Exactly. Yes.
Exactly. No, I did not. I had no bagels there. I had a lot of croissants in Tel Aviv.
So the, Tel Aviv, but in Jerusalem.
No, Jerusalem.
So the bagel chain that sells them, are they like comparable to like a bagel you find in New York?
Yeah, I think they're okay. I don't have much experience with New York bagels, so I don't know. Probably
yeah,
they're better.
Dana, they're not good. Sorry.
They're not good?
No. Tel Aviv does so many
really?
Things so incredibly well.
But not bagels?
But bagels is really not one of them.
Well, probably because it's not Israeli, so it makes sense.
That's right.
But you have to try. There's a really very like retro, old school 80s dish called a bagel toast. Mm-hmm. You know what that is?
No, what is it?
No.
It's a bagel which is similar a bit to the Jerusalem bagel. It's also with sesame on the outside, and it's soft. And they like cut it in the middle, and they make like a sandwich out of it. But they toast it in like a sandwich toaster, and they put like cheese inside. Or there's a really really trashy version which is with pizza sauce.
Oh yeah.
Ooh.
And so if you went to to cheap bars in the 90s, that's what you were eating.
Exactly. So it's fried. It's basically Israeli fried.
It's like a panini, basically, but with a thing. So
it's the most trashy thing, and you still can find it outside of Tel Aviv. No respectable place in Tel Aviv would ever serve it.
So then,
that's a joke, maybe like a retro joke. But yeah, in the 80s and the 90s, it was super popular everywhere. It also has olives inside. It's like really.
Ooh.
That's right, Dana. We so while we have you on the line on the cusp of Passover, Tell us a little bit, what's the bread situation in Tel Aviv during Pesach? I know that when I was growing up, there was this thing when, you know, the holiday was over, there were like huge lines outside the, you know, Arab bakeries.
Literally
and,
bread
and
lines.
Yafo, right, literally bread lines.
Yeah, well, it's not like that anymore. And you can find bread or pita bread or anything everywhere. I'm not sure legally how it works. I think that maybe they get like fined for it.
Right, legally you're not allowed to display chametz on Passover.
Wow.
We all know that, right?
Across the country?
Really?
Yeah, yeah. It's against the law to display it.
So it's like prohibition. It's like you have to go to speakeasy for bread during Passover?
Yeah, that's right.
Exactly.
And do people do, I mean, I assume a lot of people in Tel Aviv don't keep Passover, right?
No, just, you know, just the religious people.
So the rest you have to stockpile beforehand?
Not anymore. Well, you used to stock up forehead or to go to Jaffa to buy an Arab bakery to buy bread, but not anymore. You can find it anywhere. I think maybe not in supermarkets. I'm not sure, but in cafes or restaurants they serve it as usual.
They just can't display it.
They do display it. I think they just
they pay the fine.
They just get a fine and they make enough money for it to be profitable. They just pay the fine.
Because they know enough people will still buy the bread.
And people buy double the bread.
Exactly,
that's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. All the trendy places or cafes or something, they have bread as usual. So you don't really feel Passover as much as you used to.
Dana, may you have a very happy and kosher holiday. And if you want to feel some Passover, you're very welcome to come here to New York. Toda.
Will do.
Thanks, Dana.
Really noted. Thank you.
Thank
Bye.
You.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
That,
I got cited once. No joke. I was on a bus. I was 15 and stoned out of my mind. So I bought a beer, which is what I did in high school. It's drinking and, you know. And a police, I forget how this worked, but this is like an off-duty cop on the bus. And he's like, kid, like, it's not, hey, kid, you're not allowed to consume alcohol in public. It's like, kid, it's Passover, and this beer isn't kosher.
Well, the comic book and me, just us, we caught the bus. The poor little chauffeur, though, she was back in bed. On the very next day, with a nose full of pus. Yay, heavy in a bottle of bread. Yay, heavy.
So our next guest is Vince Morena, the owner of St. Viateur Bagels in Montreal, and he's here to tell us a little bit about the Montreal bagel.
Which I didn't know existed till about a year ago when a place in New Haven started selling them. And then I discovered it was it's an important world historical thing.
So Vince, let me start with kind of like, you know, an easy, obvious question. Could you explain to us why Montreal bagels are not as good as New York bagels?
I cannot.
See what I did there?
I have to think about that question. It sounded a little tricky to me. You know what? My dad has a great saying. Everyone's favorite bagel is the one they grew up on.
Exactly. That is so true.
So if you ask a Montrealer what are their favorite bagels, they're going to say Montreal bagels. You ask a New Yorker what are their favorite bagels, there have been some converts on both sides, but most of them will say New York bagels because that's what they grew up with.
It's almost like a pride thing. Like, right. It doesn't, like, you could actually like Montreal, like, you would never admit it type of thing.
Oh, Montrealers will go to war for their bagels.
Let me be the naive here. Literally about 2 years ago, I was in the Coffee Peddler, which is a good coffee shop in New Haven, and they had a little sign next to a kind of glass display case, you know, the thing that they put donuts in with a top down there you can see through on top of it. And the little sign said, at last they've arrived, Montreal bagels. And inside were these things I had never seen before. I did not know there was such thing as a Montreal bagel. What is a Montreal bagel? What makes it distinct from the bagels I knew?
Well, the main difference I tell people is that we never evolved. So I'm sure bagels, Montreal and New York have a similar immigration pattern history. So the bagels came over with Jewish immigrants in the early 1900s, and they were probably made about the same way. So they were all handmade back then and baked in wood-burning ovens. And New York kind of went, with progress and growth. They started to automate, and the bagel got bigger, and they baked them in gas or electric ovens, whereas we just stayed the same. We still make every bagel by hand. So our bagels tend to be smaller because our, you know, the hands are a certain size, so they're not, unless we get kids working, then we make mini bagels.
Kids or you know, yeah, the president of the giant, United States, yeah, of America. Yeah.
And we still bake all our bagels in wood-burning ovens. So we use large wood planks, and we bake them in small batches, so they're not, it's not an automated system. It's very much a labor of love, and it's an artisanal product. So we bake small batches, 5 dozen at a time. Every 5 minutes, 5 dozen bagels come out, crispy on the outside, chewy and dense on the inside with a nice glow. Visitors to Montreal, I say one of the quintessential Montreal things to do is go out drinking, hit the bagel shop at 3 a.m, and get a hot bagel right out of the oven.
I have to say, I was in Montreal last year. I had my first Montreal bagel. I went to the shop. It was amazing. And then you just buy sort of like a container of cream cheese and you dip.
Yeah, and especially a nice summer night.
That's exactly what I did.
Four people huddling, yeah, around the outside of the store with a container.
Exactly what I did in your store.
We have restaurants now. We're up to 8 locations. So 4 of them are restaurants, and there are schmears in the restaurants. But the most popular sandwich by far is the bagel, smoked salmon, and cream cheese sandwich.
Sounds delicious. So how did your family get involved in this bagel shop?
Well, the original founder of the bagel shop was a man called Meyer Lekovic. He was a Holocaust survivor, and he moved to Montreal in the early 50s. And so my dad was an Italian kid. He came over from Italy in 58. And at the age of 14, he started working at the bagel shop for Meyer, and he never left. In 74, he became a partner. My brothers and I all worked there. As I always say, we had 2 educations. We all did our schooling. We all had bagel school, you know. So we worked every summer. We worked weekends as we finished our schooling. And then when we came out of school, we all went into the bagel business. And we bought the whole thing and started to expand.
So in the United States, bagels are sort of seen as a Jewish food. Is that similar in Montreal? I mean, do you have a lot of Jewish clientele, or is everyone eating the bagels?
Well, when my dad started working in the 60s, my dad speaks Yiddish. That was the neighborhood was 90% Jewish, and the clientele was 90% Jewish. And then come late 60s, early 70s, it started to get more and more popular. So it became more mainstream. However, I would say it really became mainstream late 70s, early 80s. That's when everyone really started eating. But up to about the late 60s, it was primarily a Jewish food.
And do you miss those days? Did you have any nostalgia for the Jewish scene?
I do, because there are a lot of characters. You know, when I started working there, I mean, I'm 46 now. I started working there when I was 13 in 84. And you had a lot of characters coming in, you know, and you had a lot of stories, a lot of, you know, and in the 80s, you thought a lot of the Holocaust survivors were all around. You would hear their stories and you know, the bad stories, but you also hear some great stories, you know. And Meyer was still around. His wife was still around. So the Jewish scene was alive and well in Montreal, and still is. But it was different back then.
I just want to say, you're probably like more Jewish than we are, having run a bagel shop for your entire life.
We'll send you the certificate.
I have a lot of Jewish friends, and we all get along. The Italians and Jews get along everywhere.
Do you have any plans for Passover?
We actually, the same Wiener Bagel to this day doesn't close. We don't close for any holiday. So we're open. We used to, in the old days, close the whole week for Passover. So now we just close one day a year, and that's the symbolic day for Passover.
Well, thank you. That's a nice touch.
So we close one day a year, and I don't remember the exact where it falls in the Seders, but we close one day a year, and it's a symbolic gesture to our predecessors.
We love that.
And that's like the angriest people in Montreal will get, is when they find out that your shop is closed, right?
It is. Well, we only close the main store, so the other locations are still open. But some people are like, what? You know, they can't believe that we actually close a day out of the year.
Some people are like, it's 15 of Nissan already?
Yeah, I believe it.
Vince Morena, thank you so much. We will be back to Montreal soon to have some more of your bagels.
And Americans can order them online, right, at your website.
They can, yeah. So. We get so many orders now that we drive a truck over the border And we ship them from the States just to lower the shipping costs.
I'm looking at your website. It says next shipping date for the U.S., Tuesday, April 11th. So like
we can get in on this.
We go down every 2 weeks.
I like the visual of like you opening the truck and just like Jews running at it trying to get their
bagels. I got the doors down. They go, what do you got in the back? Bagels, you know?
Thank you,
Vince.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Bye.
You too.
It's just the way my day goes, tryna finagle the bagel, playing with the Legos, I'm talking about the yayo, I be in the mix.
Our final guest today is Shannon Sarna. She is editor of The Nosher, which is an online food site at myjewishlearning.com/the-nosher. And she's also the author of Modern Jewish Baker, Challah, Babka, Bagels, and more. She comes to us today from a photo shoot in New Jersey. What are you shooting, Shannon?
So we're doing first of all, thanks so much for having me. I'm so excited.
Thank you for being with us, Shannon.
I love Tablet and I love Unorthodox. And all my friends were so excited.
Do you want to give a shout out?
We love you and we love bagels.
Yeah. Which friends do you want to shout out to right now?
Oh my! I'm going to shout out to Mariel Messing, who I grew up with in my neighborhood, and whose mom used to call my mom her favorite shiksa. Recently passed away, so a blessed memory. Thank
I called my mom's friend Jenna my favorite shiksa. I'm just kidding. I didn't call her that, but
she was.
She was. Real.
No, it was totally not awkward. I feel like today it would be more awkward, which I don't know if that's a good or bad
thing. It was said with love.
So you're half Jewish. Like, what's your shiksa quotient? Do you feel Jewish? Do you feel half? Do you feel...
Well, she runs the nosher.
Like, yeah, I guess you gave it the office. Now you have the
t-shirt
now.
Making up for lost time, yeah.
I feel very New Yorker, you know? Like, I feel like... So I'm a pizza bagel, you know? I'm half Italian and half Jewish.
The best phrase ever.
Right? Like, and I feel very quintessentially Italian, Jewish, New Yorker. And I think when I tell people that might have known me for a little while, they're like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. I got it.
But at some point you had to throw down and be like, I'm going to be the Jewish cooking maven, right? That you didn't become the cannoli maven. You became the nosher.
Yeah, it was a conscious decision. I woke up one morning and decided I'm going to have a circumcision and we're going to do this.
Ouch.
I
went all the way. It was a process over many years, which as they say, is a parsha for another time. But at a certain point, I did very much embrace the Jewishness, and I married a nice Jewish boy, and we belonged to a very wonderful synagogue in South Orange, New Jersey. Shout out to Bethel.
This interview's been so great. We're going to stop right now.
So you say you identify as a New Yorker. Are bagels Jewish? Are bagels New York? What are they?
I mean, so bagels have a really interesting history, but I think bagels are like Jewish deli in some ways, is that they're really New Yorkish. You know, they came from Europe. They came from Poland. They were European in their origin, and they, like New York pizza, you know, took on a life of their own in the Lower East Side, and then, you know, after the 1930s, through lenders, really. Hold on one second.
We
My
love
dog
your dog.
Is barking.
We love your dog.
Babka.
Of course, your dog is named Babka. Amazing.
This is amazing.
This interview gets better with every second.
I'm so sad I can't be there in person.
Would you have brought Babka?
Yeah, Babka needs to come.
Does Babka ever play with Adam Sandler's dog, Matzo Ball?
All the time. We have a standing play date.
Yep.
But not during Pesach, obviously.
So, what's your favorite bagel recipe?
Well, I mean, my own, obviously.
And what makes it so good?
Why is it so good? So what I found was so interesting in the process of researching bagels was that it was less about the recipe. You know, all of the recipes more or less started out with 4 cups of flour, water, yeast, a little bit of salt. But it was really the process. And of all of the recipes I've created, challah and cookies, whatever, it's like the labor of love because you really have to take the time to do it right. You have to make them the night before. You have to like make the dough the night before. You have to let it sit in the fridge overnight. The dough consistency has to be just right so that the bagels keep their shape, so that they have that gorgeous, like shiny, crusty exterior. And then when you bake them, that they stay crusty on the outside like a real New York bagel. They're not Montreal bagels. your crusty New York chewy awesome bagel.
So that, I mean, that was our next question, which is, you know, we've talked to the Cleveland bagel people, the Montreal bagel people. We talked to an Israeli food writer who said they don't really have good bagels over there. Like, is it is it all New York? Is it New York, New York, and New York for you?
The only people I've ever heard really, like, really push up their bagels is the Montreal people. They're really pushing hard, and they're delicious. I was in Montreal recently. I tasted them, but they're just not the same. And I didn't grow up with, like, so many Jewish foods so firmly, like, entrenched in my brain and taste buds, but bagels I did. Because bagels, like, an equal, you know, it's like a great equalizer of Jewish
life. It's a democratic food.
Yeah. It's not too religious. Everyone wants a bagel and schmear on Sunday. And I have that taste, that muscle memory of what a bagel should taste like to me. And for me, it's just, it's all New York or nothing.
That's like,
and not even just any New York bagel. Like, you know, you have the spots you go to for your bagel.
So, so that we're talking about the purity of the New York bagel. What is like the biggest Shonda in recent bagel trends that you think? Is it like blueberry cream cheese? What is it?
So, you know, as somebody who plays around with traditional Jewish recipes and makes them more modern and millennial all the time, it's hard for me to say, like, something's a Shonda, but I will say that I was pretty horrified at the Flaming Hot Cheeto bagel based on the place in New Jersey.
Oh, my God.
That's offensive.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So there's the best way I can talk about this is, like, and somebody says to me, like, why do you make all these crazy challah flavors? And it's partially because, like, to me, I didn't have, like, one challah that's the challah you go back to. But I do kind of have that, like, one idea of what a bagel is. So the Oreo cream cheese bagel, you know, those kind of, like, don't really do it for me. Although I did make multiple flavors of bagels from my cookbook. So, you know, it's, I think it's such a personal balance of, like, what, how do you keep the sanctity of the bagel, but not go too far. And for me, the Flaming Hot Cheeto bagel is just the
abomination
over the line.
I have to say, my favorite thing that you've written for Tablet is the candy filled challah, which is covered in sprinkles, and it's like a Halloween treat, and it's beautiful because I think it's what you're saying. It keeps the, like, this idea is like you eat it with your children. It's a family thing. It's still a challah. It's beautiful looking, but it, like, has a little extra punch.
I think, and the reason I did that was because Halloween and Shabbat fell on the same night.
Halloween.
People in equal parts were horrified. How dare you, you know, talk about Halloween and Shabbat, and other people who are like families like me for whom, like, they have little kids, and how do you balance, you know, wanting to do Shabbat with your kids or just, like, wanting to do Shabbat in general, even if you don't have kids, and also, like, you know, going out and being in costumes and stuff. And I think you can replace that with whatever the holiday tradition is. And it's a balance. I really feel like we're all just, like, navigating this space of, you know, meaningful Jewish life that's modern and
has sprinkles.
Hot Cheeto bagel.
So, you know, we're recording this bagel show to run right before Passover, sort of like a wink at the fact that we are, like, you know, getting as many bagels on as we can before we have to eat matzah. What's, like, a really fun matzah thing that you do with your kids for Passover?
I did do this really fun funfetti matzah cake. It's like layers of, like, frosting and matzah and then, like, more frosting and lots of sprinkles on top. And it's really beautiful.
So you're, like, hiding the matzah inside all the frosting?
Yeah. I mean, it's really healthy. You know, there's no, it's all natural.
It sounds so nutritious.
So you identify as a pizza bagel. I think pizza bagels are the most delicious food because they combine two of the best things. Do you make them often?
I do. It's like I have a pizza bagel as like a comfort food.
Yes,
all the time. And in the book, there's going to be a whole spread of pizza bagels, of different ways you can make pizza bagels. And I tried them all, and I still go back to just, like, you know, tomato sauce and cheese and broil it, and it's just perfect deliciousness.
Shannon, thank you so much for joining us. Have a wonderful Passover. Shannon Sarna is editor of The Nosher, and her book is Modern Jewish Baker: Challah, Babka, Bagels, and More. Thanks, Shannon.
Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
Thanks, Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Passover season mazel tovs, Liel?
Yeah, a big, big mazel tov to a former guest, Tablet sometime contributor Bethany Mandel, who is about to give birth to kid number 3. And also for introducing me to the Instant Pot, the greatest kitchen gadget ever, of which I had recently bought a second.
Which
would make the Seder much easier. So mazel tov, Bethany. Chag Sameach.
She hasn't had you're not in the superstition thing where you don't mazel tov, you don't talk about the babies before they arrive. I guess you're not.
I guess I'm not.
I guess you're not.
I hope Bethany
She's
isn't
full of surprises.
Either.
This won't air till next Thursday.
There
so
could be a
fine.
Baby by then. Stephanie.
I want to say Liel's been pushing me to get the Instapot, but now because of like being engaged, I have so many like appliances that I didn't have before, and I have room for 0 of them.
They're
so
all,
I have like a rice
obsolete.
Cooker, a toaster.
Yeah, the Instapot is all these things. It's obsolete.
It's all of them?
All these things you have are
obsolete.
What the about like on Passover you're supposed to recline, but if it's an Instapot, you don't have time to recline because it's so fast.
The Instapot is actually a pillow also.
It is for the Seder.
What's your mazel tov, Stephanie?
My mazel tov is for Julia Frakes, whose birthday is today. So by the time she hears this, we'll be a week old. So happy belated birthday, Julia.
Yeah, Julia. And my mazel tov, I have two. One is to my bride, Sid, who has been cooking nonstop.
When does she stop being your bride,
I was about
by the
to
way?
Say. I think 4 kids in, she's
Do you know why I say
wife.
My bride? Because at some point, some person had a certain politics where they got there was somebody who caused a ruckus about men who talked about their bride, which I just think is a sort of charming and sweet way to talk about your wife. And somebody thought it was like deeply anti-feminist. And so I'm just it's just a kind of little
Do you refuse
dig.
To be alone with other women who are not your bride?
Only when drinking.
I'm actually only alone with my wife or Mike Pence's wife.
He said Karen Pence or Sid Oppenheimer.
It's Karen Pence or Sid Oppenheimer. That's
Mike Pence prefers to be alone with men.
That's Oh, damn. He's only alone with Michelle Bachmann's husband. So my That's first offensive. One is to Sid, who really has been cooking nonstop for a couple weeks now, and we have no room in our freezer for anything.
Muzzled.
Muzzled. Happy Passover,
Happy
bitches.
Passover.
Indeed.
Unorthodox out. Unorthodox is brought to you by Tablet Magazine on the interweb at tabletmag.com. Our show is edited by Noah Levinson and produced by Alyssa Goldstein and Shira Telushkin. Rabbinic supervision this week by Rabbi Moshe Rosenberg, author of the Hogwarts Haggadah. Go get it now. Kosher slaughtering is by the Pharaoh. You can find Tablet on Facebook and on Twitter. We're at Tablet Mag. Our music is by Golem. And we record in Argo Studios, which starting next week will be completely unleavened. We're proud to be part of the Panoply Network. Shalom, friends, and we wish you journeys out of whatever captivity you find yourself in.